from the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School. This is Knowledge at Wharton on Business Radio. Here's your host, Dan Loney.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Knowledge at Wharton here on Sirius XM 132 Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. It is the 6th of December. Coming to you from Philadelphia on the campus of the University of Pennsylvania, as we do each and every weekday. Great having you join us. This is what we've got coming up for you on today's show at the top. We're going to be talking about the National Football League because there are more issues, as you have many of you have probably no doubt read, with domestic violence involving NFL players in the last week. And now, as well, a consultant brought in to help with the issue involved with the National Football League Players Association has left her post because of not enough action. We'll take a look at the recent incidents and where the NFL and its Players Association are failing right now. Then in about 30 minutes, the issue of concussions in sports. It's not just linked directly to the pros or college. There's a growing concern in youth sports as well. We're going to be talking with one mom trying to help the cause with youth football. She just happens to be the mom of an NFL All-Pro tight end. And she'll be joining us here in studio in about 30 minutes. Then in hour number two, Malaysian billionaire Zhou Lo. He is on the run as his government and the U.S. Department of Justice want him in conjunction with a global fraud and money laundering scheme. It's highlighted in the new book, Billion Dollar Whale. And one of the authors of the book, Bradley Hope of the Wall Street Journal, will be joining us at 11 Eastern time to discuss what is going on. It is an ongoing investigation right now. And then in our final 30, Italian luxury retailer Dolce & Gabbana in a PR nightmare right now in China, and it may cost them billions in one of the world's largest economies. We'll explain what happened and what they are trying to do to correct it at 11:30 Eastern time. All of that over the next 2 hours. Your comments and questions are welcome throughout the show. The way for you to join in is either by phone at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you're not able to get to your phone, you can send us a comment on Twitter at BizRadio132 or my Twitter account, which is at Dan Loney, L-O-N-E-Y-21. First, though, here's what you need to know from today's business headlines. And we start out north of the border in Canada, where that country's officials have arrested the CFO of Chinese tech giant Huawei for violating U.S. sanctions against Iran. Meng Wanzhou, who is the daughter of the founder of the company, is facing extradition to the U.S. to face charges. Wells Fargo is firing about 36 district managers, according to the Wall Street Journal. The reason is oversight failures tied to the sales scandal within the bank 2 years ago. This is the latest move to try and assure stockholders and regulators that positive changes are occurring within the bank. Meanwhile, Social Security benefits, the latest cost of living adjustment has come out, and benefits will rise 2.8% going into 2019. Private sector payrolls added 179,000 new jobs, according to the monthly report by ADP and Moody's Analytics. That was below expectations of 195,000. Service sector jobs accounted for most of those gains. And Walgreens is partnering with FedEx to provide next-day delivery service for prescription drugs. The hope is that this will help Walgreens compete with Amazon, which is growing in the space. You may remember they agreed to buy PillPack back in June. The National Football League is facing criticism in its handling of recent cases of domestic violence by two of its players. Reuben Foster with the San Francisco 49ers was arrested on a domestic violence charge while on a road trip with the team in Tampa, Florida 2 weeks ago. He was then released by the 49ers, but almost immediately signed by the Washington Redskins. Then a video of an altercation between Kansas City Chiefs Kareem Hunt and a woman surfaced on TMZ. Hunt was also released by the Chiefs, and no other team has signed him yet. These incidents highlight the continuing problem with the way the NFL is handling cases of domestic violence. Recently, the expert that the NFL hired to help the Players Association change policy, Georgetown Law Professor Deborah Epstein, resigned over lack of movement on the problem. With more on this, we are joined on the phone by Ken Shropshire, who is CEO of the Global Sports Institute and Professor Emeritus here at the Wharton School. And also joining us is Nellie Drew, who's a professor of practice in sports law and director of the Center for the Advancement of Sport at the University of Buffalo School of Law. Ken, Nellie, thank you very much, both of you, for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, Ken, we have talked about issues surrounding the NFL in the past, and this, I guess, to a degree, it seems to highlight a little bit of a disconnect between the league, the players, on these types of issues. Do you agree?
The league, the players, society, what's right. These are very difficult issues, and I think much like our legal system, there needs to be flexibility, there needs to be consistency, but there needs to be action and fairness towards the players. And somehow the mix has not worked right for the NFL in terms of how to respond in each of these slightly nuanced situations, but all of them very, very negative and requiring action, both because it's the right thing to do, both because it's the corporate image, unfortunately, if we think about it in terms of PR terms. So, the NFL, starting most dramatically with the Ray Rice incident 4 years ago now, has not figured out, or at least has not acted in a way as though they've focused and structured a method of dealing with domestic violence when it occurs in this public kind of way.
Nellie?
Yeah, I agree, Ken. I think that's exactly fair. It's a problem that society as a whole is grappling with as well. But to Ken's point, the NFL is so high profile, and so much of what they represent is the image and the image of the game and of the players that play the game. And therefore, there's higher scrutiny, and consistency in particular is something that has eluded them.
What do you think is missing in this process right now, Nellie? Because we're talking about, obviously, as you both have mentioned, it's a very serious social issue. And while this is not occurring to every player in the NFL, it is occurring enough, and with, as you mentioned, the high-profile nature of the league, it continues to be a concern that seemingly that we aren't able to slow this problem down.
Well, it unfortunately, to some extent, it has to be a reactive posture, right? So the NFL does have its personal conduct policy in place. They have a procedure and a protocol. As Ken mentioned, there's the need to be flexible to some extent. But again, the key is consistency. And so it's a very, very bad message when, you have a situation like that which unfolded over the weekend, and you have something where a situation where a player has an incident, and then they're released by one team and signed by another 48 hours later. And I think that is something that the NFL can get its arms around. That's something that needs to be addressed at the ownership level.
Ken, there's also the other part to this story, as I mentioned, with the Georgetown law professor who was working with the NFL and the Players Association, who resigned her position. And she has made some fairly strong comments about lack of movement on some of these issues and how to try and move forward. How do you respond to her criticisms?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I mean, certainly don't know the interactions and what happened between her and the league. I know that I've done a lot of work with the league over the past years. It's a difficult place to move, like any big enterprise. So not exactly sure what happened there. I do think, just in a general sense, that sometimes the best form of protest is just to walk away, is to move away and to bring more attention to a situation. So I can appreciate that. I do want to make sure we throw in the conversation early on. There are so many great men in the league, and there's so many that are doing great things. We're doing some tracking of the amount of money and the amount of effort on social justice and those sorts of things. So let us not dwell more than is appropriate, and I think it is an important issue, on these instances that have occurred and this lack of action that's occurred. But there's a lot of great stuff going on, too.
Go ahead, Nelly.
Yeah, if I could echo that, Ken, I think that's absolutely fair, and I think it's very, very unfortunate that the amount of scrutiny is being directed as it is at these issues. Again, as important as they are, it tends to overshadow the wonderful work that so many other wonderful men in the league are doing.
We are joined on the phone by Ken Shropshire, the Global Sports Institute, and here at the Wharton School, Nelly Drew, the University of Buffalo. We're talking about the recent domestic violence incidents with two NFL players. Your comments are welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you'd like, send us a comment on Twitter at BizRadio132 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. And I guess, Ken, as well, just as concerning would be the decision by the Washington Football Club to sign Reuben Foster 48 hours after this all kind of hit the media.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating to me. I mean, it's you know, I'm basically a Philadelphia guy, so I'm not a fan of that club anyway, and I'm not a fan of the name of the club.
Right.
And here's another layer. I think in some ways, you know, this country being one of redemption and second chances, there was a way to do it. I mean, there certainly was a way to say, okay, we'll hold on to his rights until this is worked through, and we may not allow him to play after all, or something. But but it was very much a, okay, he's available, we're going to take him. They trot out Doug Williams, who makes another layer of inappropriate statement. He's a great man who said some inappropriate words. So there's nothing, you know, there's another layer. I mean, where it's highlighting what's going wrong. So the league handles it wrong, and then here the Washington Football Club handles it wrong, and an employee handles it wrong. So it is very problematic.
Nelly?
Yeah, I agree. And again, you know, getting back to the point of credibility, consistency and credibility are inextricably linked. So if you have a personal conduct policy that specifically says that there will be a four-game, you know, suspension, for behavior that fits the definition, and then you either drag your feet or don't impose that, that's a problem.
And I guess to a degree, going back in time, Nelly, the fact that the Ray Rice incident was handled the way that it was by the league, and the suspensions, and then ultimately, his not able to play anymore, not, you know, able to have a team sign him anymore, it's really going to hold the NFL to a certain standard every time there is one of these incidents. And God, I hope that there won't be, you know, any more moving forward. But it is going to hold the National Football League to a higher standard because of what happened with Ray Rice.
Yes, I think that's fair. Unfortunately, the NFL has become the poster child for domestic violence in professional sports. And that's the conundrum that they face. I have a question though for Ken. Ken, what do you think in terms of going forward? Is the league likely to have some sort of discussions, at least behind closed doors, or possibly even come out with some sort of a policy that restricts owners from signing players that will ultimately end up on the commissioner's exempt list for some period of time?
Well, I think so. I think, you know, it is interesting. We're seeing this to some degree. I mean, it's 4 years of real time where these issues haven't been dealt with yet. You know, what is it that owners can do in this instance? And that certainly becomes a bigger issue of one between the Players Association and the league and the management council to make sure that all the players in this, and I mean players, I'm talking about owners and GMs and the like, are scrutinized in the way they behave in this space. And we see this in so many different places, so many different leagues, so many different sports. The desire to win often trumps good sense, and it often trumps what's right. And the idea that you can lock in a great player and maybe be ahead of the other teams in doing so, because maybe it's found, and in this case, it's not likely that the events didn't occur, so you're ahead of the game. But I think we're seeing, you know, with the second player, with Hunt, the idea that no one has signed him. We're seeing some of that logic occur now. That okay, you know, we should not do this, no matter how great the player is. But yeah, and I certainly think, again, it's a, you know, the unfortunate thing for the NFL is policy is being molded And these things take time. I mean, it's been 4 years, but these things take time to get right.
Well, how much then, Ken, does also play in? And for those that don't know, the commissioner of the National Football League is hired by the owners of the teams. So there is that element of connection that, to a degree, what the commissioner does in policy really has to mesh with what the owners want.
Well, that's right. It is the, you know, probably the strangest situation, the strangest position in corporate America is the commissioners of these various leagues, that they are actually not financially the neutral party that we might anticipate that they are. They are paid by the owners, even though you can say the players generate the funds, but the idea of how they get and how long they serve, that is determined by the owners. So right, there is that imbalance. You know, the hope is that there's an ethical balance that the commissioner can provide, that he, and largely in these leagues it is he, will step out and act in a way that's in the best interest of the league, of the sport, of society, and not just those that are writing the check. So it's difficult. And often, again, let's give them these men credit. Often they do pull it off, but some of these issues are more difficult than others.
Nelly, I'd be interested, from a legal perspective, one of the questions that has been asked quite a bit, especially in the wake of what happened with Kareem Hunt, is the fact that this video pops up on TMZ, and seemingly the Kansas City Chiefs did not know about this video or had not seen this video. That's obviously why they released Kareem Hunt as quickly as they did. And it was similar to what we saw with Ray Rice. And I guess the question of a lot of people is the availability of these potential videos to the teams, which are either being held by the police or by somebody else, so that they can make a determination about that person's employment.
Well, I think that puts a spotlight on the difficulties that the leagues face when conducting their own independent investigations. You know, they're not public entities. They don't have the ability to subpoena documents or video or anything else. And in this instance, if I'm not mistaken, the Cleveland police themselves had not accessed that video. So that's a challenge for the league. Unfortunately, you know, we know that these videos are oftentimes out there, they're available, and you know, what are the lengths to which the league should go in attempting to obtain them? Should they be paying for them, like presumably TMZ did?
Ken, your thoughts?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, it's a whole kind of nefarious world about being able to obtain these. This is what TMZ does. And, you know, I kind of jokingly tweeted that they – it came out, you know, should the NFL acquire TMZ? I mean, they should be able to find these.
Ken, can I ask, do you remember when George Steinbrenner got into trouble for trying to obtain information like that about one of his players?
Yeah, no, exactly. And the privacy elements and the world that you deal with to get these kinds of things. I mean, you know, it's the, and again, in this instance, I don't know, it is the rebel scoundrel former security guy that snuck the tape out, that's, you know, puts up something on the dark web. I've got this tape available. So, you know, does the NFL want to be, is out to be being involved in that? TMZ does not care. So those are the kinds of issues that are there. And right, if you don't have the power of subpoena, you can't just say you got to turn it over. So that's part of the difficulty there. But that, again, is a policy issue. Maybe the NFL should get out there on the dark web and participate.
Well, and it's not exactly like the NFL is short on cash, Ken, to be able to make these payments if they actually needed to.
Well, if that's what it takes, and that may, you know, I would guess. I mean, right, think about the Ray Rice incident. I think we all were sort of, oh boy, there are these kinds of tapes there. This is kind of the, you know, I think the Ray Rice moment for in many ways was the, boy, not only is there the social media thing, but there are cameras everywhere. So I do think there's a reevaluation that has to take place about if we are really going to do the right thing, if we're really going to look out for the best interests of everybody involved and the fairness to the players to get to the answer as quickly as possible, then this is something that really has to be considered.
Nelly, your thoughts?
No, I agree. The question that it brings to mind, though, for me, is the extent to which the NFL and other leagues should be doing a sort of a deep dive on players' backgrounds prior to signing them in the first place, and especially when there are some sort of inklings that this person may have had a troubled past, which was certainly true, I believe, in Kareem Hunt's circumstances.
Well,
Ken, what do you think about that?
Well, and Ken, I mean, we know that the NFL teams do a pretty intense background when they're getting ready to draft players coming out of college. But I guess it's a continuing process. It needs to be a continuing process, even when they're potentially going to be signed as a free agent.
No, that's right. So there is the in the NFL, so the combine and all the kind of investigation that takes place before drafting a player. But these are young men, and transitions happen, change happens, improvement in how they behave happens. So there's a determination in that space that has to be made too. But I agree. I mean, how much investigation can be done, and how can you know what future behavior is going to be? So that's part of the problem too. But it absolutely is something that goes on. It's absolutely the right of an employer to do as much investigation in this space as they choose to do. So it's something to look at, but it's very difficult to know with certainty who you got.
We're joined by Ken Shropshire, the Global Sports Institute, also Nellie Drew of the University of Buffalo. Your comments are welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you can't get your phone, you can send us a comment on Twitter, at BizRadio132, or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. The other part to this, Ken, is the Players Association. And obviously the role of the Players Association is to protect the players, in many cases, on the contractual side. What is the Players Association doing now, and maybe what do you think they need to do further in this area?
Well, usually in these instances, it is fairness and consistency. It is to make sure that the rules that are in place are applied appropriately in each situation. So people sometimes react negatively when the Players Association files a protest or moves to mediation or whatever it might be to delay this kind of process. But that really is kind of a check and balance in the system to make sure the players are provided and delivered and receive the rights that have been negotiated. And even beyond that, that in the sense that we want everybody to be treated fairly in society, the union also often reaches on what the agreements are between the parties. Just to say, hey, that's not fair. You can't treat our guys like that. So it's a tough. Sometimes this is a tough PR place for the union,
right?
But I often like to think about it. Somebody's really got to look out for these men, because in some of these instances, these men will turn out to be innocent, and they're just kind of a ringer.
Nellie?
Yeah, that's a fair point, and that's a very difficult line to strike. Having said that, though, I think a large part of what we see in terms of the appeal of various disciplinary penalties is just a reflection of where the reality is right now between the league and the union, and it's not in a good place. And certainly over the course of the last several years, there's been so much discord with respect to player disciplinary issues in particular, that I think it gives rise to appeals perhaps when the union is pushing back against the process as much as it's pushing back against the actual events at issue.
What is the expectation then, Ken, that we should have of the league and of the Players Association going forward? They obviously are trying to do, I would imagine, as much as they can on this issue. And I know the league does a variety of different programs for players when they're coming into the league, rookies, to try and help them adjust to this lifestyle. And it makes you wonder how much of this is discussed in that type of programming.
Well, a lot is. I mean, I've gotten insight into a lot of the conversation that takes place. So it's really a key issue, a key focus. Referred to as DV, domestic violence. I mean, there's a whole terminology that takes place on the inside trying to deal with this. So, but it is, and I don't know the percentages off the top of my head, but it's very close to the rest of society in terms of the instances that occur amongst this group of men. It's just the high profile level that allows us to see a lot more of it. I do want to say though, and this is maybe more generational and in some ways, to me it's just and maybe because in my more youthful days, it was behind closed doors, it wasn't as public, and all the things we've talked about. It is astounding to me that men, especially men of this strength, think this is okay. I mean, it really is just a very difficult, socially, and I'm going to speak for the African American community. It's such a anathema, such the reverse of what's taught, with mothers and women and this sort of thing. So it's just very striking to me that something different is going on, maybe amongst just a few men in terms of what is thought to be okay in some ways. Just the Kareem Hunt video was just very striking to me that seemed to be the next move that a young man would take in a confrontation of that nature.
Well, and the other part to it, Kenny, is kind of the digital nature of our society to begin with. And even though this was video that was, hotel security footage, how many times have we seen something happen with anybody, let alone an athlete, that was videotaped on somebody's smartphone? And we're in a day and age where pretty much everybody has to be aware all the time of things that are going on around them.
No, very, very much so. And it's just been ramped up so high. And I don't know. Maybe there's a maybe I have a unfounded hope that we're turning a corner. We will turn a corner. That there will be this realization that look, this is going to be seen. This is going to be uncovered. Your tweet is going to be seen. Somebody's got a phone that the privacy level that you may have thought existed a generation ago exists no longer. So your wrongdoing is going to be uncovered, whatever it may be, beyond domestic violence.
Nellie?
Yeah, and to be fair, the NFL does cover those types of issues in their rookie orientation program, and they have a fairly comprehensive program and in which this has a large part. The problem, to Ken's point, is that you've got these young men who and especially in this generation, maybe just learning. I think the next half generation, if you will be much more aware that all of their actions can and will be on tape in some way, shape, or form, but this group still seems to be struggling with that a bit. And the question I guess I might raise, and not to throw too much of a red herring to the mix, but it keeps occurring to me, is Ken asks the question where does this behavior come from, and I have to wonder if some of it is associated with the issues we see with frontal lobe problems with CTE type related issues.
Ken?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, beyond these guys, there is. In society, but again, it's the visual of this. I mean, I just hadn't seen it before. There's just an occurrence of this at a level that it just has me wondering what is it. And certainly, in some instances, it's illness, mental illness, physical illness. But in others, it's something that's apparently accepted in a neighborhood. A particular neighborhood or particular culture that somebody may come from.
Great having you both with us today. Thank you, Ken. Nellie, thank you. Thank you as well.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Ken Shropshire from the Global Sports Institute, CEO, and also Professor Emeritus here at the Wharton School, and Nellie Drew at the University of Buffalo. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion surrounding football, but this time we're going to talk about the concussion issue because it is one that has been brought up quite often in the realm of college and pro sports, but now there's an even greater push to look out for our kids, really trying to see if you can mitigate the issue of concussions in youth sports. We're going to be talking about that coming up in just a minute. You're listening to SiriusXM 132, Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School.